Literacy Council and the Racine Food Bank. Call 262-598-4803.
This is WGTD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. In today's show, I want to talk about this topic of the balance between government regulation and breaches and how they're handled and what regulatory authority the government, different governmental agencies even have with regards to private and publicly traded entities. And the best way to really get a handle on these types of things is to go deep looking at a specific example and learn from a specific example. And I mean, I think it's not as fruitful to look at things in terms of amorphous generalities. So I'm going to bring to your attention a court case that went on between the Federal Trade Commission and a company named LabMD, who is now out of business. And as far as I'm concerned, they should have been out of business. It was basically their desire to fight the Federal Trade Commission instead of just acknowledging their wrongdoing that drove them out of business. And while I certainly do understand the CEO of LabMD's perspective, where he said effectively that if they agreed to the findings and the corrections, so the corrective actions that the FTC, told them that they needed to agree to, then that would result in the end of their business, because then their customers, which were medical offices, doctor's offices, etc., would cease to use their service. Do we really have a problem with this? Isn't that what the point of the free market is supposed to be about? If indeed they were in gross, egregious violation of easily mitigatable, easily preventable computer security issues, then do they deserve to go out of business? Perhaps, especially if they were supposed to be compliant with HIPAA's High Tech Security Act, which has been around for a very long time. It is pretty straightforward, and in my professional experience as a security architect with 25 years of experience, basically I'll tell you that if a company is following IT security standards and best practices to the point where their objective and goal is just to protect their company from getting hacked and from having issues, they would already be HIPAA compliant. So being a healthcare covered entity shouldn't be the reason that an organization becomes HIPAA compliant at the computer security level. And I want to differentiate a couple things here. HIPAA compliance is not just about the High Tech Security Act. It's also about practices and procedures that human beings will do with paper and information in general. It's the type of thing that covers things where, you shouldn't be having a conversation with a patient or about a patient where another patient or another third party could hear. So it's also just about audio privacy of conversations. It's about things like unless you've explicitly given permissions, your doctor is not supposed to talk about your medical concerns, even with another family member. Okay. So when I'm talking about HIPAA in this context, I'm talking about the High Tech Security Act, which is the coverage of the things from computer security that should be done with related to HIPAA. All right. So LabMD they were receiving lab, they were receiving things to test in their lab that were delivered to them by referring doctors, referring hospitals, you know, various medical entities, even veterinary clinics, etc., that were looking for medical laboratory testing services. There you go. Nothing really more complicated than that is necessary to know about that. So, again, everything I'm going to tell you here, think about it in terms of the caveat context that I've already given you, which is that if a company was even attempting to do the due diligence necessary to keep their computer systems from getting hacked, they would already be HIPAA compliant from the High-Tech Security Act perspective. They don't have to be a medical healthcare entity in order to have this requirement. Now, there's an interesting overlap with the Federal Trade Commission rules and regulations as well, and the FTC many years ago, and I think rightly so, and this is, of course, up for debate, which I'll go into in a bit. The FTC put forth regulations that basically says if you have personally identifiable information, which, okay, I have to tell you that if there's any company that's out there that has employees, they are going to have personally identifiable information. If you have customers or you have employees, you're going to have personally identifiable information, right? Names, addresses, telephone numbers. In the case of employees, you're going to have social security numbers. You could even have things such as direct deposit bank data. You'd certainly have information associated with their medical insurance, maybe not their medical treatment records, of course, but things related to what medical insurance plans and coverage they might have, etc. Therefore, virtually every company that is out there that is going to have personally identifiable information. Now, according to the FTC regulations, there are certain things that you should be doing in order to protect that information from being unlawfully accessed. Not only unlawfully accessed, but unlawfully disclosed. Disclosed could be poor information technology security that allows a third party to hack the systems in order to obtain that information. It could be just, you know, an endless quantity of scenarios I could come up with. I could probably spend 16 hours coming up with the plethora of ways in which that information could be disclosed or mishandled. What's important to know is that for the last 25 years, at least, the National Institutes of Standards and Technology has had cybersecurity standards. Now, maybe they didn't always call it that. Maybe in the Wayback Machine, they called it, this is what you do for passwords, this is what you do for your computer systems and your networks and so forth. Well, it's now called the NIST SP-800 Procedure Security, Cybersecurity Procedures and Guidelines. So we'll just call it the NIST Guidelines or the SP-800 set. This is all very clear, obvious things. Again, I'm telling you this from the perspective of somebody who is a network security architect, a system security architect, somebody who's been doing this for a living for the last 25 years. None of it's rocket science. I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's certainly much less difficult than putting a man on the moon. It is also predictable, repeatable, explainable, and in many cases, it can be done very cost-effectively, and I'll give you a great example of this. So about a year and a half ago, I got a call from, I couldn't even begin to remember what that company was, but some person called me out of the blue and says, we have these security services, and you could white label them and resell them to your customers. And this person was telling me about all these cybersecurity services that they do. And I just kind of chuckled and I said, you know, I've been doing that for the last 25 years and I've got systems in place already that are so cost effective and so leveraged that we are able to bring the Lockheed Martin cybersecurity kill chain capabilities to a one-user residential environment. I'm not kidding you. And then the person just like hung up the phone on me, which I think is kind of rude. You call somebody and then solicit them and then just hang up. That's just, it's very rude. It's highly inappropriate as far as I'm concerned. Nonetheless, the point here is that while it's complicated, it can be done, and it can be done on an annually predictable dollar amount that is at a dollar amount that is acceptable and accessible to a one-user residential environment. And it's effectively a mitigation plan that if you spend this amount of money on your own one-user residential cybersecurity plan on an annual basis, then what you've done is created a situation where you're taking control over the cost profile of the solution. You're not going to have a situation where your computer gets hacked and then you have to have it rebuilt and you're going to lose your data and, you know, all of the hoopla that comes from that and all the trouble, the outage, the downtime, etc. So what I found is that people that didn't have the cybersecurity kill chain framework in place, their computers were getting compromised, their computers had to get rebuilt. The cost of the rebuild was about the same cost as, let's say, two-thirds of a three-year plan for the cybersecurity kill chain. So you could have just paid for the 3 years of the cybersecurity kill chain framework implementation and have those services in place. Or two-thirds of that is consumed by a single PC rebuild after an incident. So, and again, we're talking about a single user residential environment. So now at the point in time when you get to a business-sized organization, you know, 3, 5 users, 30, 50, 1,000, whatever. As far as I'm concerned, it is beyond egregiously unacceptable. And I am very serious when I say this. It is egregiously unacceptable that a business that could write these expenses off as a business expense would not do what has been proven and what is recommended not only by the IT security community, but also by the government. The Federal Trade Commission recommends it. PCI standards say you should do it. The High Tech Security Act says that you should do it. NIST says you should do it. The DOD says you should do it. And frankly, if you look at things like the IRS says you should do it too. So there's all of these organizations that are basically saying, yeah, you know, this is what you should do. And it doesn't, you know, you don't have to go for perfection out of the gate. I think in a lot of cases, we have to look at cybersecurity as a Kaizen sort of approach. You are going to first baseline and take care of everything that is obvious and easy to take care of and just stop all the major bad doo-doo that, you know, somebody, if you got breached because of that type of an issue, somebody should just get a giant fish, and slap you upside the head with the fish because of like how stupid and how preventable that situation was. It is pathetic when a breach of an organization occurs because they didn't spend $1,000. I'm not kidding you. In a lot of cases, these issues can be closed as a security gap for such a microscopic amount of money that it could be less than their paper costs for a quarter or a month or something. You know, so it's just beyond inexcusable when I read about these examples where an organization with more than adequate resources got breached. And then the worst one is when they don't just fess up to it and say, like in the case of LabMD, they should have just fessed up to it and said, you know what? Yeah, we certainly could have had these IT security best practices in place, but no, we did nothing. And so now we've got, you know, 10,000 patient records, healthcare treatment records of their lab results is available out there on the internet, unencrypted, on a peer-to-peer shut file sharing network, which is exactly what happened. Okay. So I'll get into this a little bit deeper and we'll talk about the various learning points from it at each piece here. So here's the summary from the FTC. They basically filed a complaint against LabMD alleging that LabMD failed to reasonably protect the security of consumers' personal data, including medical information. LabMD collectively exposed the personal information of about 10,000 consumers and LabMD billing information for over 9,000 consumers was found on a peer-to-peer file sharing network in 2012. And furthermore, LabMD documents that contained sensitive personal information on at least 500 consumers were found in the hands of identity thieves. So, you know, how did all this happen? Well, it basically happened because they had no security. It's just flat out. And I mean, I don't want to go into all the technical details on it because it would bore you. But basically, LabMD had no security. Had they had even the most basic levels of network, PC-based security, and application security, then this entire thing would have never happened. And their response was to basically claim that the Federal Trade Commission got this information in collusion with an extortion company. All right, so now let's get into that, because this is another interesting thing to learn from this case. So there's a company out there by the name of Taversa, who is an IT security company, who they basically troll the internet for compromised data. So data that shouldn't be out there on the internet, but it is. And then they use that to go and look for customers that are potentially in need of their services. So Taversa reached out to LabMD and said, hey, we found this out there. This is really bad. You need some serious help and we can help you. And we can help you now. And I think that Taversa, while they may have had some slightly unscrupulous practices, the reality is that they did find the problem. They did take it to the company first, but it was the response of the company that was the problem. Because the only reason that the FTC even became aware of this issue was because of the inappropriate response by LabMD, where they claimed that simply uninstalling LimeWire from their PC corrected the issue. That is total bullpucky. Total and complete bullpucky. That is not a solution to the problem. So out of concern for these 10,000 plus consumers, Taversa made the Federal Trade Commission aware of this because it was such an egregious violation. And this is not the only time that Taversa had collaborated with the FTC by providing them information. So this whole mess started like in the Wayback Machine of 2012, and then it proceeded all the way up until some, you know, the most recent court components were as of 2016, when it was all kind of wrapped up, and LabMD had incurred massive fees, and they just basically went out of business. There were some companies, including LabMD, that alleged that Taversa was colluding with the FTC and that they had fabricated some of the breach data. So again, as I said, if maybe Tyversa was not doing everything that they should have been as above board as they should have been. But the reality is that if LabMD had not been in enormously massive, gross, egregious violation of all levels of common sense with regards to cybersecurity standards, the problem would have never occurred to begin with. Now, one of the disturbing things that came out of this whole situation was that Tyversa became a retaliatory lawsuit recipient, meaning that LabMD sued them and some other companies also sued them, claiming that if Tyversa had not told the FTC about the issues, then the FTC would have never gone after those companies. Yeah, but so what? That's not a reason to sue a company. So, wow. There's so many lessons here. I think the biggest one of which is that if you're a manager in a business or you own a business, you have really just got to come to realize that not spending money on competent, and I mean competent, of which is difficult to find, competent IT security services and competency with the realm also of knowing that they are in a process of mutual kaizen with you. They are always consistently trying to make it better. There is an open list of things that need to be improved in your environment, and they are working with you in order to just consistently work on that so that you're not having to go through massive expenditures at unpredictable times. Instead, you've just got a regular IT budget, and every quarter you're working on something. Every single quarter, something is getting fixed, improved, security gaps are getting closed, and you know, maybe it's employee training. You know, it could be a plethora of things. But fundamentally, this is about you taking control over the cost profile of risk in your organization. If you don't do those practices, or if you're relying upon your internal IT department to do that, which in the vast majority of cases, your internal IT department is not going to have the skills to get those things done unless you're talking about a 10,000 user organization. So you need some help with that. Please get it, because the alternative is these situations here where you get into some sort of lawsuit with the FTC and you're out of business, you know, or it does something terrible to the reputation of your business because you got breached and compromised and then nobody wants to do business with you anymore. So I really fundamentally have a problem with how it is that the Federal Trade Commission allowed Tyversa to be brought in as a retaliatory lawsuit recipient. I think that one of the problems that I've seen in the IT security industry is the vast majority of IT consulting firms will not say anything to anyone ever when it comes to disclosing that a company has been made aware of severe issues in their environment, has been given the opportunity to correct those severe issues, and then chooses to do nothing, and they are clearly in violations. And I'm talking about criminal violations here, because it is a criminal violation to violate the HITECH Security Act, and it is a criminal violation to allow willfully through negligence or other you know, preventable negligence or some other mechanism where it's a gross negligence sort of thing, not like, you know, hey, we were doing our best and then this really obscure bad thing happened, right? That's a different situation. than through gross negligence and willful neglect, that personally identifiable information of your employees, your customers, your patients, whatever, got breached. There's just no reason for those sorts of things to happen. And those are criminal violations. And I'm just not surprised when the FTC gets involved and shuts some things down. Now, one of the other interesting things that really came out of this particular court case was LabMD's attempt at getting the lawsuit dismissed. Their attempt to get the order of correction vacated, as well as to get the lawsuit dismissed, and, you know, a variety of things where they basically said, we don't have to do this. You know, they alleged that FTC colluded with Tyversa. They alleged that the FTC does not have the regulatory authority to tell them, to tell LabMD what IT security practices they should be utilizing. Now, I read the court case documentation myself, and my assessment of what the FTC was asking them to do was reasonable. The FTC was basically asking them to close the security gaps, get competent help, and because you guys couldn't fix this problem on your own, and we need to have some sort of a validation mechanism that it's not going to happen again, we require an annual audit by a qualified, certified third party. So I think that's reasonable, frankly. If the FTC's job is to protect the personally identifiable information of consumers, that is one of the things the FTC is supposed to be doing. You know, why does the FTC have regulatory authority over the credit reporting bureaus? Well, there it is, consumer protection law right there. So LabMD was actually alleging that the FTC did not have direct regulatory authority to tell them what IT security practices they should be using. Now, certain people in Congress actually agreed with this. Head explode. Yes, my head exploded when I heard about this. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, so if the Federal Trade Commission doesn't have the ability to say, our charter is, you know, one of the things that we do is to act as an enforcement mechanism to protect personally identifiable information of consumers, you know, basically consumer protection law. And, you know, we have all this expertise sitting over there at NIST and DOD, and they've already come up with the guidelines that, by the way, they collaborate with the IT security industry. And, you know, everybody agrees on this stuff internationally, pretty much. You know, this is like nothing exotic is happening here. There's not too much left up for interpretation and speculation. It's just this is kind of how it is. And it's the wisdom of the crowds. You know, they are good standards. To suggest that the FTC can't rely upon all that leveraged existing, you know, high quality information is, it's silly. It's just really silly. But that is actually what they alleged. So if you have any interest in having quite a bit of entertainment from this, feel free to look up FTC versus LabMD, and you'd be looking for court cases that ranged from 2012 to 2016. And but bottom line, you know, if you've got a business, really please take control over the cost profile of closing these security gaps before the FTC comes and gets you, because, you know, hopefully they should. You know, they should be doing more of this, not less. Well, that's it for today's show.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.